I'm sitting with Dr. Edwards and Dr. Guy Walls, and I want to just ask you a couple of questions about the research so far and the experiences you've had, and specifically towards the interviews that you conducted today. And Dr. Edwards?
The interviews we conducted today were with five of the females. And what was interesting for me from those interviews was the hopelessness and the despair that you could not only see in their facial expressions, but you can hear, even though the females spoke a different language, you could hear it in the translation, how they must have felt with the hopelessness and despair. So that was the first thing that really got me to thinking about what we had found in the research versus actually being there and interviewing the females face to face. And then another thing, another factor that came to my attention when we talked about religion and when we talked about spirituality, even though they practice religion, they believe in this higher power, they believe themselves to be spiritual people. And they worshiped. Some of them were saying, they try to worship every day. Some of them were saying that they only worship like on Sundays. They say a prayer in the morning. They say a prayer in the evening. It just really captured their belief system.
One of the interview subjects mentioned towards the interview's end that she didn't really care to live anymore. What struck you about that, and where do you suppose that came from?
Well, she was one of the young ladies that I interviewed, and she talked about because she no longer had parents, and she didn't have any family members who she kept in contact with. But the odd thing about that particular female was, even though she said she felt like killing herself, she was depressed, she didn't blame anybody but herself for why she was homeless on the street. So that struck me as odd about her situation, because she talked about how she became homeless was her mom had some kind of disagreement, mom put her out, but she blamed herself, only herself, for being homeless and for her situation. And she talked about being depressed and wanted to kill herself because she had a child. And she felt that she was the one who was supposed to take care of her child. She is the parent, and she was the one who was responsible for her child. And her child was homeless on the street like she was. And because of that, she was saying that she felt depressed about it. She felt suicidal about it because she didn't know what else to do. Even though she had the group of females that she hung with, even though she felt that she was the one who was responsible for her child, she felt that she had no other out.
So, as a social worker, when you encounter this kind of thing, where do you see the lack in society, culture, or system, and where should it be picked up?
For me, when particularly when you talk to female males who experience or who are in this particular type of situation, to me, it really speaks to a gap or a lack of services in the system. Because she talked about in that interview too that there was nowhere she felt she could go, for help, for somebody to talk to. She felt that there was no one. And so my thing was that maybe if she knew about a place where she could go to talk with someone, about what was going on with her, if she knew of that place, if she knew of where to go, then she could talk with someone about those feelings that she was having. Because even though she talked about the group of females that she hung out with, she didn't feel like that she could go to them to talk about that issue of depression, suicide. She didn't feel like she could talk to them, even though they were the group of girls that she hung out with on a daily basis.
So that may be something that's cultural and inherent, that it's not acceptable to speak about feelings, specifically about feelings of despondency or depression.
Well, with her, I don't think it was a cultural issue per se, because she talked about how she wanted to talk about it, because, you know, I was a stranger, and she talked about it, you know, with me, with just meeting for the first time. And so to me, that meant that she did want to talk with someone about it, because she brought it up in the interview, you know, on her own without me asking questions about it. I mean, it's just something that she brought up in the interview on her own. And she talked about in the interview how if she would have had some, you know, someone to go to or some place to go to talk about, you know, those issues. But on the other side of this issue, she didn't feel like, though, that she could talk to the females, although she talked about how, you know, they were her family, you know, they took care of each other, food, clothing, shelter, whatever, they shared that amongst themselves. She didn't want to talk with them about an issue such as suicide or such as depression. She wanted to go and talk with someone outside of the group.
Now, yesterday when you interviewed the group of boys, they almost all mentioned that there was a difference between the way the boys were treated to the way the girls were treated. Now, today the girls almost all said there was no difference. Why do you suppose?
To me, it came down to perception, how they felt others in the community or other people outside of the group treated them. Because if I remember correctly, two of the girls that I interviewed talked about a difference. They felt that it was a difference. They felt that the people in the community looked down on them because they felt that they should be, you know, in the house, in the home with the husband, you know, or something, not outside on the street, you know, not outside sleeping on the street. And to me, it really spoke to how each girl perceived how the community looked at them. Because when I talked to one of the other females, now she talked about how she didn't see any difference and how the people in the community treated them. Although they called her name, and she spoke up specifically to a name that they called her, but to her it wasn't any different than they treated the boys. Even though they had assigned her a name, she didn't feel like, her perception was, you know, they didn't treat me any differently than they treated the boys, even though they assigned a name to her and no name to the boys who were out on the street.
Basically, they call everybody names, so what's the difference?
Well, no, she said that they called her a name. She said they called her a name. And one of the other females said that they didn't call, you know, her a name or anything like that. But they called her a name. And she took that as being, you know, treating the same way that they did to boys. So, again, perception.
Okay, going back to the policy for support, or lack of policy for support, where do you see society or government or culture becoming involved? And on what level? Is this a bottom-up or a top-down kind of approach that needs to be made?
One thing that struck me about the females and the males that I talked to, they talked about how a male in particular talked about how the people in the community, even though they didn't know him, they knew he was homeless, that they would come together, get money together, and send him to the hospital to take care of himself. So even at that level, you know, even though the people in the community, they knew he was homeless, they knew he hung around with another group of homeless boys, homeless males, they still worked together. If he was sick, to pay for him to go to the hospital. So I think that speaks a lot about the particular area of the community that they reside in. Some of the females, too, if I'm not mistaken, that I interviewed, now they talked about how the community that they resided in didn't want to get involved. You're in with the other female, so you know you guys should take care of yourself and don't come begging to us for money. You girls handle it. You're homeless. You're with this group, so you girls handle it.
Okay. Any other comments about your observations today?
Some of the other things that come to mind, particularly when you look at the males versus the females, even though with some of the males, some of the females, they talked about how it wasn't a difference. But when you look at the response, or when you hear them talk about the responses to the question with some of the females versus some of the males, it really looked at perception, how each one of them perceived the people in the community, how they viewed them, how the people in the community viewed them. It was really based on their own perception of those people in the community. So even though some of their responses were contradictory to what they were saying when they responded to the question, it really looks at how they perceived those people in the community looking at them.
So it's a self-esteem issue is really what's at the root of most of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because some of them talked about the self-esteem issues that they experienced because they were homeless, because they were on the street, and they talked about the hopelessness, the helplessness that they felt, with nowhere to go, and even when a question was posed to them about how do they see themselves, 6 months from now, a month from now, a year from now. And many of them talked about they have aspirations of wanting to get out, of wanting to not be homeless anymore, wanting to one day, working a steady job, having their own home, having, husband, family. They spoke about it in terms that even as they talked and it was translated, that it was something that was unreachable, that they couldn't reach because of where they were now, where they saw themselves as being at that particular moment in time.
Okay. Dr. Guy Walls, your observations from today?
In listening to the girls talk, the first thing I noticed when the girls started to come in, out of the 5 to 6 girls, I noticed that at least 4 of the girls had children and that those children were living on the street with them. That caught my eye immediately. As I began to interview the girls, some of my perception was similar to Dr. Edwards, which contradicted what I had gotten from the boys the previous day, is that all of the girls that I interviewed did not really view that there was a stigma attached to the girls that was not there for the boys as well. So they saw that both were treated differently in the sense that they were treated differently because they were street children, but not in the sense that they were treated differently because I'm a female and my counterpart over here is a male. They did not identify that as a significant difference. That was a little bit contradictory because 2 of the girls talked about being the victim of rape, and I did not hear that information or that type of information being shared by my boys during the time in which we interviewed them. So again, that was a perception thing because the abuse was a factor that that was present among the girls that were homeless. Other things that I noticed about the girls, I noticed that there was a pattern that was being developed among all of the girls, with each one of them sharing their stories. And one of those patterns was, again, that they didn't see that there was any difference. Another pattern was that it became apparent that these girls that were living on the street was indeed dealing with a significant amount of depression, and that there were no available services that were identified specifically to address that issue. So they are being left to deal with it the best way that they can. One of the young ladies that I interviewed, the way that she is dealing with her depression is that she has a dual diagnosis in reference to addiction, because she identified herself as being addicted to a local drug, which was a stimulant, and then she also stated that she felt like she was also addicted to alcohol. This same young lady her story was one of the more, I guess, for lack of a better word, graphic, because she talked about she was in a larger group than the other girls had been in on the street. Her original group consisted of 15 girls. Currently, it consists of 5 to 6. And she talked about some of those girls had left, but some of those girls had died. And that some of those girls had died because they were the victim of STD diseases. One had died of syphilis, and two had died of HIV and AIDS. And that she herself had been exposed to TB, but she had been treated for that. And by self-report, she said that she had been cured. Another pattern that I noticed, not only among the girls, but also among the boys, when the question was presented, had you been able to forgive the people who may have hurt you while you were on the street, and the reason why you came to the street, most all girls and boys reported that they had been able to forgive the people who had hurt them on the street. Some of them identified other kids as hurting them. Some of them identified police officers for as hurting them. Some of them identified step-parents as hurting them. But they all struggled with self-forgiveness. They all reported that they had not been able to forgive themselves. And, you know, to me as a social worker, what that spoke to was because they had not been able to forgive themselves for acts that they may have committed on the street in order to survive, also contributed to the depression in which each of them reported that they were experiencing. So that, you know, that within itself kind of concerned me, and that was a connection that I made as I listened to each story that was being told.
Okay, now one of the things that I also noticed as being pretty consistent, you just mentioned the issue with step-parents. Is that something that we're seeing here? Is that a cultural issue? Is there any recourse?
I don't know so much as if it was a cultural issue, but I do know that I had probably at least 3 other recipients that I had identified a poor relationship with the step parent. And in fact, one young man identified that that there was a significant difference made between him, who was the son, the only son of his biological father, and that his stepmother had two other children that she showed favoritism over as opposed to him. And he gave the example of that he was made to get up really, really early. He had extra chores. He was given a significant amount of work to do while the other children did not, and that he was not fed at the same level of the other children. And with all of those things being compound, led to him just leaving.
Any other thoughts on today's study?
Thus far, I think that the study has been going really, really great. I think that we have been very fortunate to have created some inroads prior to coming to Ethiopia. And because of those inroads that we had created partially while we were at a conference in South Africa and making connection with some PhD students at Addis Ababa University as well as the president there, a lot of the legwork had been done for us. And so we were able to move right into doing the interviews rather than having to search for our participants. So those collaborations have been really, really good. We were fortunate enough, too. We ended up having a bonus in that we had met another young man who was working with this particular group of street youths that we interviewed for as organizing them in a manner so that they can earn some type of money to help support themselves on the street. And so he, too, played a role in getting us the participants at the site where we needed to interview them. So I'm very excited about this particular research. I think that, or our hopes is that the outcome of this research will offer a different understanding, one of the magnitude of the number of children that are living on the street here in Ethiopia. And then, too, from the literature, that there is some comparative factors that that we're seeing among the youth here on the street that the literature has spoke to for as youth living on the street in other parts of the world. So I'm excited. Tomorrow we will get to do the interviews with the NGOs. And what I'm hoping from that is to be able to listen very carefully to what services that they say that they provide to the children on the street, and remembering what services that the children had identified that they were receiving or that they were not receiving, so that we can begin to address this gap and make a difference in filling the gap.
Thank you. Dr. Edwards, anything on to wrap up?
Yes, and we're also hoping from not only the interviews that we have conducted with the females and the males here as well, the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, and the governmental organizations as well, not only do we hope to identify those gaps in services or lack thereof, but we're hoping that the interviews that we have conducted with the homeless females and males, that it will lead to some kind of intervention or some kind of program or some kind of services that the non-governmental organizations or the NGOs and the governmental organizations can develop to help address some of the issues that the children experience on the street. Because with the females and the males that we interviewed, they talked a lot about lack of involvement, government involvement when it comes to, you know, if they needed shelter, it wasn't anywhere for them to go. If they needed clothing, you know, it wasn't a kind of clothing bank or anything like that where they could go to food as well. And they also talked about a lack of a place to go if they were ill and on the street. They didn't have anywhere to go. They didn't have a clinic that they could readily go to, you know, for aspirin or you know, for a shot, anything like that. So we're hoping that our conversations with the NGOs and with the governmental organizations, that it will lead to some kind of program or service, or again, to address those gaps in services or lack of, to meet some of the needs that the males and females spoke about in our interviews with them. We would also like to thank the Middle East Studies Committee, who gave us the opportunity to come here and conduct the research, as well as Dr. Gloria Gibson, who was also instrumental in helping us to come and to conduct our research, as well as Dr. Jacinto, who was unable to come because of his illness. So with the support and help of Dr. Jacinto and the work that he conducted in terms of the literature and the research to be able to develop the proposal to come here, we really do appreciate the time and the effort that Dr. Jacinto, Dr. Gibson, and the Middle East Studies Committee has provided us in order for us to be able to come and do the research.
It would be remiss of us to not to thank our chair, Dr. Barbara Turnage, who has wholeheartedly supported this research endeavor.